next Saturday, instead of morning, let's all celebrate, Alon Shimriz, and make Chamin and this joyful event of meeting your family and friends and having a big pot with this brown celebration of unrecognizable food.
Welcome to 18 Jewish Foods, Culture and History, in kosher bite-sized portions. This podcast tells the stories of iconic Jewish dishes, shedding light on the people who eat them. Here's your host, Joel Haber.
Welcome. This episode is one that's very close to my heart because it is the subject of the book that I've been working on for the past few years. I'm not obviously going to tell you the whole book, but I will be giving you sort of the main idea today, along with a number of interesting tidbits and fun facts. So today's food is what I typically refer to as the Shabbat stew. It is a collective term for many different dishes. Perhaps the most well-known version to many of my listeners is called chulent. I will be discussing many of them along the way today. But the reason that to me, as I said previously, I think that this is potentially the most Jewish food, even more than matzah, is because whereas matzah is typically eaten once a year for a week, the Shabbat stew is eaten by many Jews on a weekly basis, every Shabbat, every Sabbath. Beyond that, it truly embodies Jewish history. Following the Jews throughout the diaspora, this dish came with us and morphed in each place, just as the Jewish people did. So what is the Shabbat stew? Essentially, it is a version of a multi-ingredient dish that is prepared on Friday and then left to cook throughout the entire night, Friday night, to be eaten as a hot lunch on Saturday. Many Jewish communities, almost every Jewish community around the world, has some version of a Shabbat stew. And I want to show you a bit of the diversity by discussing three examples. So first we have chulent, which derives from Eastern Europe, Poland, Lithuania, and the main ingredients in it are beef, barley, potatoes, onions, and various types of kidney beans. In Morocco, we have dafina or schina. Both of these names are used somewhat interchangeably. And the core ingredients there would be lamb, wheat berries, chickpeas, sweet potatoes, and lots of different spices like cinnamon or allspice, also might have dates in there. And from Iraq, we have a dish known as tabbit. Tabbit is very interesting. You take an entire chicken and it is stuffed inside with rice, flavored rice, and then buried again in more rice outside so that it has two different kinds of rice, the rice from the inside and the rice from the outside that have two different tastes. All three of these dishes sound completely different, and yet, in all of them, there is a core of a meat and a grain, and all of them, most importantly, are left to cook through the entire night, Friday night, to be eaten for Shabbat lunch on Saturday. So to me, these are not different dishes, but rather different versions of the same dish. So let's begin with why. Why would anyone create a dish of this nature that cooks through the whole night? Basically, you have two competing desires. On the one hand, Jews want to honor the Sabbath with the best food that they have, including, for example, a hot stew. But on the other hand, according to traditional Jewish law, it is forbidden to actively cook on the Sabbath. And so, if you cook it before the Sabbath and leave it to stay heating the entire time, that is permissible, and that allows you to have hot food on Saturday. There are many sources, both Jewish and non-Jewish, which indicate that this was an ancient desire, but probably people would each do their own thing with whichever food they want. But the earliest version that seems to have solidified as a popular single dish is known as harissa. We are not referring to the harissa that many of you may know as a spicy paste from North Africa. This is an ancient dish that is still eaten in many places today. It's basically wheat with lamb that is cooked and then pounded up into like a big thick porridge typically served with melted fat on top and maybe some onions inside and some cinnamon. This appears to be the first unified version of a Shabbat stew as we know it, and you will notice that it is little more than just that core duo of grain and meat. From the Middle East, the dish moved with us and took on many new forms. In Spain, where Jews came with the Arab conquest arriving from the Middle East, the dish eventually grew in sophistication, and many new ingredients went in, such as chickpeas, perhaps some vegetables. And once you have all of these new ingredients in what before was a simple grain and meat porridge, you can't keep calling it harissa. And so it gets two new names. In the south, it was known as adafina, which comes from an Arabic root meaning buried, because one of the traditional ways of keeping it hot was to bury the pot in coals overnight. A second name in the north, however, is khamin. Khamin just means hot. And so both of these two words indicate an aspect of cooking this overnight stew. One of the other things that happens in Spain is the first example we find of what I call a bonus food. What I mean by that is a food that cooks inside the stew pot, but then is removed to be served separately. And in Spain, we encounter what are known now as huevos jaminados. This comes from Ladino, Judeo-Spanish, and it is essentially slow-cooked eggs that turn brown and kind of creamy inside. It is a very beloved food throughout the Sephardic diaspora, but it begins in the jamin pot itself. From this point forward, we begin to see many other bonus foods among many of the other communities. Spain, along with Portugal next to it, became what is known as Sfarad, and it was one of the major hubs of medieval Jewry. The other, a bit to the north, was on the border territory between France and Germany. This area became known as Ashkenaz. In Ashkenaz, this dish gained a new name, shalet. Shalet, or chalet, is a translation of the word chamin. It also means hot, like in modern French, chaud. Back then it was chal. And the major changes there were for ingredients. For example, anything in Spain would have been fried using olive oil. There was none in northern France. And so there, they would use schmaltz, which is rendered poultry fat, typically geese there. From those two medieval hubs, the Jews spread in many directions. I don't have the time to follow all of that in this podcast, but I want to give you a few of the examples of interesting things that came about. Many people today will cook their Shabbat stew conveniently in a crock pot or a slow cooker. And some might look at that and say, oh, well, you know, that's a little bit modern or innovative. The fact is, however, that the inventor of the crock pot was named Irving Naxon, and his birth name was Irving Nachumson. He heard from his mother or grandmother that they would bring the chulent to a baker's oven, a very large oven, and let it slowly cook there all night. And he had the idea to translate this surrounding warmth to a personal level. So I think that using a crock pot for your chulent is absolutely appropriate because it owes its invention to chulent itself. Many people looking at chulent specifically will think of potatoes as a core ingredient, and they are a core ingredient for many Eastern European stews, but they were not until about 150 or so years ago. For much of history in Europe, people did not eat potatoes. They thought that they would give them leprosy or something. And only in the middle of the 1800s do potatoes become popularized, particularly in Eastern Europe. And once they do, they become something that Jews ate nonstop. From Sfarad, or Spain, when the Jews were expelled in 1492, they basically spread across North Africa and Southern Europe. One of the interesting examples in North Africa, in Morocco specifically, is called dafina, which you hear the name is based on adafina from Spain. And the telltale element of that stew is that a number of the ingredients are cooked separately in the pot in bags, and everything is served in a separate dish. So you'll have the meat in one place, you have the potatoes somewhere else, or the sweet potatoes, you'll have your grain in a separate dish. And I feel that perhaps this is the extension of the bonus food idea. They saw that we could put one food in, take it out, and serve it separately. So why not turn the entire stew into a sophisticated and fancy multi-course meal? In Southern Europe, there are no major versions. There are people who make a Shabbat stew of some kind, but certainly many do not. And even those who do might make different versions in each place. And I think that perhaps the major thing that this reflects is that as the stew left the Middle East and went to Spain, it passed through North Africa. It did not go through Southern Europe. Only with the arrival of Spanish and Portuguese refugees did this stew arrive in the area. Some people may have started to make it, but it certainly didn't join a widespread tradition, and that might be why it is not popularly eaten all over this region. And perhaps the most interesting is what's going on in contemporary times. First of all, there's a great degree of irreverence, putting in newfangled ingredients and or mixing together stews from different parts of the world. And I believe that that reflects some of the postmodern mentality that exists today. But more than that, I think it also shows that there's a lot of people today making a Shabbat stew that didn't have a tradition from growing up. Either people who were non-observant and then became observant, or those who have converted to Judaism. Their mom didn't make any Shabbat stew, and so they don't have to feel beholden to her recipe. Perhaps the craziest development is seeing people using cholent in completely new dishes. I've seen examples of a cholent pot pie. I've seen cholent turned into a fried dumpling, and believe it or not, cholent flavored ice cream. That one takes the cake, or the cone. To bring us a story that I think really shows the importance and the significance of this dish, I invited Ruti Russo to speak with us. Ruti is an Israeli chef, food writer, and she's appeared on numerous Israeli TV shows that are all connected with food. Currently, her show Food Truck has changed formats, as you will soon hear. During the current war, she was involved with an initiative that I think really tells a lot about this food's connection to the Jewish people. In the first episode this season, you met with a group of young adults, 25, 26, who were evacuated from Kibbutz Kfar Aza, and they told you about one of their friends who was taken into Gaza as a hostage.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So we had this television show that we were filming before the war, but then the war started and we decided to travel all over the country and pretty much feed the people we want to hug. So the first group we visited were the young group of evacuees from Kfar Aza. They were raised together and they're like a tight family of 19. They were 19 people. You know, they've been through hell on October 7th. They lost some friends, some good friends, and three of their friends were taken hostages into Gaza. Alon Shimriz and the two twins, Ziv and Gali Berman. And they told us with a smile, and it was beautiful to see, because even though they were so hurt and in so much pain and agony, they were able to talk about the habit they had with Alon Shimri, is one of the hostages, and his family, of meeting every Saturday morning. Every week they would come to his house, his mother's house in the kibbutz, and have chamin, chunt. And they said it was such a strong habit that they're sure that even though he was taken hostage, that he every Saturday he goes out, he's having chamin at his mom's house, and he comes back to Gaza. And it was such a beautiful story to hear. I mean, the hospitality was the part of being with the group, hanging out, falling asleep after the chamin, getting up, getting another portion. I mean, that was the habit.
Now, this story unfortunately took a very tragic turn in mid-December when we received, amongst the hardest news of this war,
three hostages were mistakenly killed by the IDF, one of them being Alon Shimriz. That day you wrote on your Instagram, you had an idea. Tell me about your idea that you had.
It was a weekend. I think it was a Saturday when we found out, when they came up with the news. I was sitting in the living room, and first it was just the news that three hostages were shot by the IDF. And then I saw the name, and I felt my heart was just being shattered into pieces. And at some point, I mean, I just told myself that it's just not fair. That's not the way to remember Shimriz. And I came up, I mean, it was just, you know, an idea of a second. It wasn't something I planned, and I definitely didn't realize what a big thing it's going to be. And I put on Twitter, I just said, you know what, let's, on Saturday, instead of mourning, let's all celebrate Alon Shimriz and make Chamin and this joyful event of meeting your family and friends and having a big pot with this brown celebration of unrecognizable food and you know, meet the people you love most in those really hard times and raise a glass in memory of Alon Shimriz and think about him with a smile.
Actually, you used a beautiful phrase also. Instead of raise a glass, you said to raise chaminados, the chamin eggs,
right,
which I thought was so beautiful. And the response, I mean, it seemed like from what I've read, it was incredible. I mean, tell me about the response.
It just turned viral in seconds. I mean, I totally lost control over the event, and I said, you know, since I'm a chef, I said, if you never made chamin, I'm here for you. No one is going to say I'm not going to do it because I don't know how to make chamin. I'm going to give you all kinds of recipes. I had a file that I made with four or five different types of chamin recipes and a vegetarian recipe, because so many people asked me for vegetarian chamin. I was like, you know, the whole point in chamin is using the meat and the bones. And it really blew my mind how many people got involved in this all over the world. I had people in Argentina, in the US, in Canada, in all over Europe. It was amazing. It was amazing. And everyone was, you know, at the same time thinking of Alon Shimriz with a smile and pain at the same time.
What a beautiful thing. Did you hear from any of the friends that you spoke with on that first episode?
Yes, of course. I heard from the friends and I heard from the family. I mean, they were all, you know, moved by everything that happened because of this. And it was a moment of I can't even say a smile, but, you know, some...
Comfort,
I guess, yeah. Ever since then, I feel like they became part of my life, a permanent part of my life, the Shimriz. And, you know, I stay in touch with them. Their chunk of me is with them, no matter what I do.
Very sad, but very beautiful as well. And so we see that this dish, the Shabbat stew, is really the most Jewish food there is. The Jews have spread all over the world. We look different. We speak differently. We dress differently. And yet, we are all unified as one Jewish nation. This dish has moved everywhere. It gets different names with different ingredients and different flavorings. And yet, all of them have a core that's the same and are cooked through the night to be eaten on Shabbat. The 20th century Zionist essayist Ahad Ha'am famously said, "More than the Jew has kept Shabbat, Shabbat has kept the Jew." I would like to add that as much as Shabbat has kept the Jew has kept the Shabbat stew. On the next episode, we will be discussing charoset, and my guest will be Susan Weingarten, a food scholar who literally wrote the book on charoset.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed. Got any questions or comments? Please feel free to email me at jewishfoodbook@gmail.com. Please listen, like, and follow wherever you get your podcasts. And I would truly appreciate it if you'd share this with other Jewish food lovers. The theme music you hear is A Dear Who Revisited by Rebbe Soul. Check him out wherever you stream music. And as always, until next time, I wish you B'tei Avon.